It was the year of fans.
The year of engagement.
The year we had great conversation.
It was the year of reruns.
The year JP joined us.
The year of moves.
And the year of joy.
It was the news show.
It was the end of bloopers.
It was the year everything connected.
The year is 2018. The Place, the Babylon Project podcast.
Hello there, Babylon 5 fans. Welcome to the newest Babylon Project podcast episode. This is Raul Wybera, and as always, I am joined by my good friends Jim Arrowood and JP Harvey. How are you tonight, gentlemen?
Doing fine from Vegas.
Everything's cool here in central Nebraska.
What stays in Vegas, or what happens in Vegas stays in Nebraska, or something like that?
Stays on social media.
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah. So what have you guys been up to?
Same old thing, just trying to make a living.
Yep. Know that. Been there, trying to do that. Though unfortunately, I kind of got a bit of a sidetrack. Okay, I understand this. I absolutely hate the zombie genre, all right? That shouldn't be a surprise to anyone who knows me.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow, both Anthea and myself have gotten totally hooked on iZombie.
iZombie.
Huh, iZombie. Never seen it.
Rose MacGyver, let's just say that young lady has some amazing acting chops because she has to take on a completely different personality every single episode. And she sells it. Anyway, we're not here to talk about iZombie.
No.
We are here. What are we here to talk about?
Well,
besides Babylon 5.
Well,
which Babylon 5?
Yes.
Well,
the second episode of season 4, Whatever Happened to Mr. Garibaldi?
Wasn't Jakar asking about that?
That
last week.
That's Jakar's big question. Yes, one of the big questions.
Uh-huh. And this is one episode that in a way for me was kind of weird. It goes from sort of actiony mystery type sleuthery to deep philosophy into the nature of being.
Well, you know, it is actually, and I don't mean this in a bad way, it's actually kind of a slow-moving episode.
Yeah.
But it is jammed full of really, really neat stuff.
Yeah, you couldn't have said it better.
Yeah.
It really couldn't have been said better. And this is one of those episodes that it's like when you do the rewatch, it's like, oh yeah, I forgot that was in there.
Yeah.
And I found myself doing that a lot. Well, let's give the listeners an idea of what we're talking about here. If you've got a recap ready for us.
Coming right up.
Archive. Access. Initiated.
On a storm-ravaged planet, Jakar follows Garibaldi's trail. He discovers an apparent component of Garibaldi's Star Fury has been sold by a scrap dealer. When Jakar confronts the dealer, instead of learning where he got the fragment, he instead winds up in a fight. Marcus appears on the scene and helps Jakar when he is being ganged up on. Marcus then forces the dealer to admit that he heard about the derelict Star Fury from a man named Montaigne, a representative of Interplanetary Expeditions. Marcus returns to Babylon 5 to track down Montaigne, and Jakar heads to the area of space where Garibaldi's ship was found adrift. The owner of the bar in which the fight took place tells a Centauri friend where Jakar is headed, and as a result, Jakar is kidnapped and taken to Centauri Prime, where Emperor Cartagia presents him as a gift to Londo. Later, Londo tells Jakar that he will save him from death if he helps bring Cartagia down. Jakar agrees on the condition that Narn is freed from Centauri rule, to which Londo agrees. Still on Zahadum with the enigmatic Lorien, Sheridan begins to realize that there is something wrong. He realizes that he has not eaten for 9 days, yet he isn't hungry. He has been walking in a straight line, but keeps returning to the same place over and over again, and he finds that he has no pulse. Lorien tells him that he is trapped between life and death, and that in order to find release, he has to let go of life. Lorien further tells him that if he has something to live for, he will survive, and further admits that he, Lorien, is the first of the first ones, the oldest being in the galaxy. Sheridan trusts him and relives the fall into the chasm just as the white star crashes into the dome on Zahadu. Back on the station, Delenn mourns Sheridan by fasting, which is normal for a Minbari, but Franklin reminds her that she is also part human and she will not be able to handle the strain she is putting on her body. Franklin also gives her an excerpt from Sheridan's diary in which he professes his love for her. Seeing this revitalizes Delenn, and she calls the Rangers together to prepare them to go on a mission for a massed attack on Zahadum. We find Garibaldi is being held in a cell and is being asked over and over what he knows about the ship that captured him, and keeps saying that he cannot remember anything. Finally, Garibaldi goes berserk and begins smashing the lights in his cell until an anesthetic gas is pumped in, rendering him unconscious. Then, someone wearing an opaque helmet and a Psi-Corps badge enters the shell and looks down on Garibaldi's prone figure lying on the floor. Well, there it is.
There it is.
Mm.
You know, if the last episode was putting a toe in the water for season four, this was the putting the whole body in the water.
Yeah.
This is way deep.
Yeah, this is diving in head first and hoping there's water in the pool.
Mm.
And about the time you're covered, you realize you're in the shallow end. It's going to get deeper.
That's some great metaphor.
Yeah.
I like this season.
Yeah.
Same here.
Character files opened.
Well, we do have some guest cast, I guess, of a sort.
Oh, yeah. We've got, as a matter of fact, a pretty decent guest cast, really. Of course, Wayne Alexander.
Right.
Returns this time as Lorien, his fourth of 12 appearances on the show. So we'll be seeing a lot of him. Lenny Citrano as Isaac. And that is the individual who was selling the parts from Garibaldi's Star Fury. This is his only appearance on Babylon 5. Okay. Anthony DeLongis, if I'm saying that correct, is Harry. And he's the bar owner that turned Jakar into the Centauri. And this guy has got a lot of credits, and he's been all over the place. He's one of those guys that you see and you say, oh, yeah, that guy. Okay.
Actually, both of them are, at least if you, because whether it's crime dramas or whatever, it's like these are the guy, medical dramas. Both of these are guys that's like, I've seen him before.
Oh, yeah. He's the guy. That's the guy. Okay.
But you can never remember where.
No. But I do happen to have a list. This is his only appearance on Babylon 5. He was on the Logan's Run TV series.
Tells you how far back he goes.
Battlestar Galactica in 1979. He was on the A-Team. He was on the V TV series. Twilight Zone, 1986. Masters of the Universe, has done voice work on Star Trek video games, and Star Trek Voyager, he was 5 episodes as First Mage Culla.
And wow.
That was a big character
in that series for a while. Although, I don't know, his hairdo kind of made me want to ask, hey, dude, why do you have lava rocks in your hair? Okay. Then 2001, he was
MacGyver.
Yeah. 2001, he was in Outer Limits, and he also was on an episode of Highlander.
Yep.
So, yes. And then, of course, Wortham Crimmer as Emperor Kartaja. Second of five appearances on the show, so his days are numbered.
Mm-hmm.
Damien London as the Minister. Fourth of nine appearances on the show. And then I thought one notable that we could talk about was Rick Scarry, who played the Centauri, who got the information to find Jakar.
Mm.
This is also his only appearance on Babylon 5, and he's got tons of credits.
Yeah.
So that is our guest cast.
Wow. Though half of them almost seem more like recurring people than anything else.
Oh, yeah. Most of them are recurring, and they'll get mentioned as time goes along, and we'll keep track of how much time they have left.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how long did it take for Zach to not be a guest?
Most of the second season?
Yeah, most of the second season.
You got to be a guest for at least a season before you can be a regular, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It seems that way.
Well, yeah, I guess if you hang around the set enough, they'll put you to work somewhere.
Wow. The show.
Initiating plot analysis.
A few more days have passed. It's now 9 days since Sheridan died and Mike disappears.
There is a bit of a problem there. Okay. First, I'm going to play
I know where you...
Franklin's monologue, and then we'll talk about the problem.
Yep.
Personal log, January 8th, 2261, Dr. Stephen Franklin recording. It's been 9 days since Captain Sheridan was presumed killed at Zahadun. 9 days since Mr. Garibaldi disappeared on patrol outside the station. Medlab's quiet these days. The League of Non-Aligned Worlds is broken up and everyone's going back to their home worlds to prepare for the next stage of war. We know the enemy's going to strike back. Rumor has it that this time's going to be the last time. This time they're going to end it. All we can do now is wait for the other shoe to drop, or try and find something useful to do before the end. Right now, short of hand-holding or a sympathetic ear, I can't think of one damn thing.
So, the monologue is a bit in error because of, apparently, there was a script editing problem.
I know where you're going.
Okay. It's been 14 days since Sheridan departed for Zahadun.
That was what Franklin originally said. This all depends on what you actually saw.
Now, Garibaldi disappeared on the same day Sheridan died.
I think it was technically the day after that he was reported missing or some such, but yeah.
So, how long did it take to get to Zahadun?
Was it 3 days? Or was it two?
See, I don't know. So it's 14 days.
I don't remember.
It's 14 days that Sheridan has been absent from the station.
It's 14 days since he died.
Okay. And 9 days that Garibaldi's been missing.
That's what the original script said, and if you, depending on what version, the original version, here's what Joe Straczynski said about this. It's funny you should mention that because I had this already ready. I went to edit the first sentence to make it active rather than passive syntax. In handwriting on the page, after the first draft, the typists take revisions and I implement them. I meant to write, it is now 9 days since Captain Sheridan was presumed killed at Zahadun. I either missed changing the days or the typist didn't put it in. It happens. And that draft of the script is long gone, but without knowing which, I'll just take the rap for it.
Yeah.
And then under the next bullet point is, I'm considering revoicing it. We just didn't catch it until it was gone.
Yeah. So, yeah, there was some confusion there. And just thought it's only fair to point it out. But as he said, yes, things happen.
Yeah.
To put it politely.
Right. Well, we start with Franklin, I guess mostly, well, because we really haven't seen him much. And more practically, Lanier comes to get some help with Franklin. And at this point, all we know is that there is something wrong with DeLynn.
Yeah, there's a problem with DeLynn.
Right.
That's kind of ominous.
Yeah. I think about this as we go through, too. Because this is something, this will be something that you may have already kind of caught that the track in my notes. I didn't say much about her, but think about the path and the growth that Sheridan has to take in this episode, and the one that DeLynn has to take in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some interesting contrast there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what the heck is that with Sheridan? Big glowy ball. Looks like a looks like an oversized is the round bacteria with the spiky things. Almost looks like a supersized virus or a bacterium.
I don't know. It looked like a Madonna bra to me.
Thank God we're not the Madonna podcast. But it's asking two questions. Who are you and what do you want?
And we know where we've heard those before. You know,
exactly.
The who are you is from episode 221 from Sebastian. And Morden is the one who asks, what do you want, in the first season episode number 13. Mm-hmm. So now we've got a synthesis of these two questions coming from a banana bra that is supposedly being controlled by Lorianne. So,
and for those not fixated on Madonna's décolletage, that means we've got some sort of glowing creature asking both the Vorlon and the Shadow question.
If you mean décolletage is underwear, okay, I'll go along with that. I promise I won't bring it up again.
Anyway, yeah, except now it looks like whatever it was a dream. This guy is talking to Sheridan. It's like, hey, almost like a wake up and telling Sheridan that there's no escape. And then we start to get philosophical because Sheridan's talking about that, you know, like, was it the first job of the first task of a prisoner?
Well, right.
And he gets an almost Vorlon-like answer from this creature as far as, well, what about the things that you don't want to escape from, like being a prisoner of love?
Ah, yes. You know, I'm sorry to say this, but as time went on, Lorianne became tiresome.
He reminded me of the old guy when Sheridan got to Zahadum. Not quite as abrasive, but...
well...
Yeah. Can't just give an answer. He's got to dance around.
Yeah, you're talking about Justin, who was saying something, whereas Lorianne seems to be saying absolutely nothing and talking in circles.
All right, I want you gentlemen to keep what you're saying here in mind for a bit, because I've got one of you accusing, you know, in some ways it's almost like he's being accused of sounding like a Vorlon and sounding like a Shadow at the same time.
Yeah, more or less.
Well, yeah. Well, Sheridan does finally get a name out of him, but even that's not a straight answer. It's like, if I told you my name was Lorianne, what would it mean? What would it matter?
And then
he goes into the whole bit about names having power, which actually has a very real foundation in multiple theologies, in mythology, you know, in a whole lot of historical contexts. Mm.
Isn't Lorien a shampoo?
No, that's L'Oreal.
Or is that that's what it is. All right, good. Whew. I was a little worried.
You're helping me make some decisions here, JP. Thanks. let's save ourselves here. You've got the Lorien monologue.
Yes, but I did not get the L'Oreal one. I'm sorry.
No.
No supermodel. Sorry, JP.
I see you're still upset that I won't tell you my name. So what does it matter? If I tell you my name is Lorien, what good is that? It tells you nothing, but leaves me at a disadvantage. Words have meaning, and names have power. The universe began with a word, you know? But which came first? The word, or the thought behind the word? You can't create language without thought. And you can't conceive a thought without language. So, which created the other? And thus, created the universe?
I wanted to know why knowing his name, Sheridan knowing Lorien's name, would put Lorien at a disadvantage.
It seems like what he's talking about here is a trope in fantasy where you have a name that people call you, but that's not your true name. If someone else knows your true name, which you may not even know what it is, but if somebody knows what your true name is, they have power over you somehow.
And that's something that's not just a fantasy trope. It's also something that goes back to a lot of different mythologies, that a name actually confers a degree of power over someone or something, its true name.
Mm.
And it is also an element of several different theologies as well. Knowing something's true name gives you a power over it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty common, theme that not just occurs in, you know, our genres, but actually has some historical roots.
Oh, yeah. Well, then, yeah. And as you say, you know, in the Bible, Moses learns that the burning bush's name is I Am.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not a name.
And, except, well, it is given, but what you'll find as a result is both Jewish and Islam theology won't use the actual naming of God there. And it's even crossed over into some Christian sects. I know some Native American theologies have similar thinkings, and I can't remember which of the Eastern theologies have it. So I mean, so it's common both in Occidental, Native American, Orient. You know, there's a worldwide concept of that thought throughout you know, the theologies and the mythologies as well.
Yeah.
So it's. That's almost why it's at trope level in the genres.
Mm-hmm.
But Sheridan's too wrapped up in his own questions to worry about the greater meaning of life, the universe, and everything.
42.
Yeah. Who are you? Dangerous question. You know, what if he answered that as far as what do you want? 42.
Yeah.
Would have been a nice tip of the hat, but...
That doesn't work. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work.
Nope.
No.
Because
Lunquill and Broomfondle determine that the answer or the question that goes with 42 is how many roads should a man walk down?
Okay. this is not the Douglas Adams podcast, and I steal your line with no guilt whatsoever.
Oh.
Nope.
So you're saying Sheridan wasn't ready for a philosophy lesson?
No, which is probably good, because Lorian kind of does point out who are you is a very dangerous question.
Mm-hmm.
When Sheridan asks him that.
Mm-hmm.
But the conversation kind of turns around to what Sheridan is.
Right.
And in this case, according to Lorian, Sheridan is, I believe the quote was, quite dead.
Mm-hmm. Quite dead.
Or is it mostly dead?
Mostly.
True love.
But...
Miracle Max, where are you?
It's inconceivable. He meant mostly dead.
Yeah. Now, why, you know, what else would Sheridan have to expect except to be deceased when he not only fell, however...
And he remembers falling. That's the last thing he remembers.
However many miles. And, I mean, he must have taken some radiation from that nuke. I mean, it wouldn't have been confined to that one small area.
Yeah, he would have, depending on how far he had fallen, depending on the mass and G for the, you know, the G acceleration of Zahadum, he might have gotten some shielding, but he would have had to catch some of it.
If we assume that the gravity on Zahadum is the same as Earth, he would fall at 32 feet per second per second. Correct?
Accelerating, yeah.
Right.
Accelerating. The first second is 32 feet. The second is 64.
But the White Star was under power.
Mm-hmm.
So it was falling way faster than Sheridan was.
Right.
So...
But it's a matter of where the angles are and what kind of protection and what material.
And the ultimate question is, who cares?
Yeah.
Well, doesn't Lorian, without being that blunt, gets to that point, right?
Yeah.
Well, you're stuck. You're either this or you're that. You're stuck between.
You hit the bottom and you're dead, or you're still falling and dreaming.
You know, you're in that moment, and he never brings it around to Sheridan to say, what does it really matter?
Or he's caught between the moments. He finally gets around to that third possibility, which was the mostly part of dead. Caught between moments. Tick, you're alive. Tock, you're dead. A moment gone.
Yeah. Right. And he seems to stick with that for a while as he maneuvers Sheridan into a position where they can actually have a dialogue, where Sheridan can get to the point of what Lorian's trying to tell him.
Yep.
Which is hard to do. Lorian is downright depressing.
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Well, Sheridan keeps pushing back. Actually, he gets a little Jimish here in some ways, you could almost say.
Jimish.
And yeah, that's a compliment, Jim.
Okay.
And just for a moment, it's like he shows Sheridan who he is. The kind of stare and the whoosh, we're back to our glowing ball. So yeah, that glowing ball of light.
I won't say it, I promise.
Lorian, yeah. Just don't ask if it's the right cup or the B cup.
Now you're the one that's doing it.
A point.
But Sheridan's rattled.
Yeah, the look on his face is like, what?
Meanwhile, on a dark and stormy planet.
Oh boy, here we go. That's an auspicious Jakar's beginning looking, to a story.
Jakar's looking for Garibaldi and getting into a bit of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Garibaldi's ship has been found empty and drifting.
Right.
Okay, now the last time we saw it, it was inside of a shadow vessel.
Also correct.
Okay, now it's been found empty and drifting. We have no clue where Mike is or what happened, and this guy has a piece of salvage from Garibaldi's ship.
Yes. Yes, he does. And he's not really being cooperative with giving Jakar any information.
No.
Getting a lot of, it's none of your business.
Right. Hence the getting into a bit of trouble part.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And with trouble around, well, who has to show up?
Marcus, it always finds Marcus one way or another.
Yeah, though sometimes it seems like Marcus is doing the finding rather than the trouble.
The only thing that would have been better was King Arthur showing up. Because there would have been a whole lot of satisfying thumps.
Yes.
Although
Marcus
does have a tendency to make that happen, too.
Yeah, the place does end up being a bit of a mess afterwards, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, there's probably going to be some fallout for that. And it seems that part of that fallout is the owner has some info for the Centauri.
Mm-hmm.
I would say this counts as a bad thing.
Yes. Or, as I said, I have a bad feeling about this.
Not going to fall for it. Not going there.
Not going to give me the satisfaction. All right. Oh, well, that's okay.
I think I just gave you
it was it was my only hope.
Oh.
I'll get my revenge before this episode is over. Okay, we do have to make a shift here because we're back on the station. There's like three story tracks running in this episode.
Yep.
As slow as it moves, which you pointed out, that's where a lot of the density comes from. Any one of these tracks could be fairly thick, but the three of them together, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Franklin is trying to talk some sense into Delenn. And if you ask me, she's having a huge pity party, blaming herself for both John and the League.
Yeah, you know, and it seems like her human side is really showing here, because I don't think Aminbari would think that way.
Yeah, she is behaving. She is definitely, even though Aminbari do have this thing about fasting, her behavior seems almost more human than Aminbari at points.
Yeah. Her little rant. You know, the blaming thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was like her hair when she came out of the cocoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a mess. But
oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was strange. Like, we've seen Susan, moments where Susan is very un-Susan-like. Here we've got Delenn. I wonder, do you know, did they do this on purpose to highlight the point that Stephen makes to her about you're not all Aminbari, that you're part human now?
Could be.
I actually think that was a part of it, but not just on a physical level,
mm-hmm.
but also on an emotional, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. and a psychological level as well.
That little mini breakdown she had was very human and not at all Aminbari.
Right.
Yeah.
Franklin doesn't point at that. He just says, look, your body
mm-hmm.
is part human. You're hurting yourself when you fast like a Aminbari. And he doesn't address the fact that she just had a meltdown.
Right.
Which is evidence that she's part human.
Yeah. Well, and then there's just plain being depressed because, you know, everybody's pretty well written Sheridan off as not coming back.
Mm-hmm. But then she said her final comment of if he doesn't come back, she'll see him again in the place where no shadows fall. Sounds very Aminbari, at least Aminbari priest class.
Well, isn't that where...
Maybe not warrior class, but...
Isn't that where one of her previous mentors went, where the shadows don't fall?
Right.
Yeah. So, is that Aminbari heaven?
Or something.
I don't know if it's so much that or as if it's a term of phrase.
Hmm.
Because she also makes a comment along those lines to Sheridan when she's going into the Markab, I thought. When they isolate themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's said in the same context that you're describing as well. But moving on, Marcus and Jakar, they've now teamed up. And the search for the two of them is going on well beyond what you would expect for a simple bar fight, which has them a little concerned. And I know this is a longer clip, but I'd ask you to get this one just because we don't have a whole lot of the real Marcus Jakar banter.
Yeah.
And this is a great example.
Good thing I went out on my own. You're rather difficult to hide.
How is it outside?
They're still looking for you. I don't think it'd be safe for you to leave for a while.
Strange that they are still after us. The altercation was a small one. No one was harmed. Doesn't make sense.
You're right. That's the bit that worries me.
If you're going to be worried every time the universe doesn't make sense, you're going to be worried every moment of every day for the rest of your natural life.
Your point being?
My point being... Why am I talking to you? And what are you doing here?
I heard you were looking for Mr. Garibaldi on the assumption he was in trouble. So I went looking for you on the assumption you'd probably get into trouble.
I was doing fine until you showed up with that thing in hand.
It's a Minbari fighting pike, several hundred years old. You're just jealous because you don't have one. Bad case of pikal envy, if you ask me. So, you think you have a lead on Mr. Garibaldi?
If that was his Star Fury they found, then he may have escaped or been intercepted. I'll go back later and...
I think it would be better if you let me do it. They seem rather eager to find you. Eagerness like that.
Worries you. Well, I suppose I should appreciate your concern. Compassion is a rare commodity these days.
So, why are you doing this?
He's my friend. I've never had a friend before who wasn't a Narn. And you?
I've never had a friend before who was a Narn. Damn few of any other kind. Most of them are dead.
May I?
To open it, you press...
I like it.
Oh, good. You got the cat squeal. I was,
yes.
I'm like, that is just a wonderful little touch to it. Oh, God. And Pykel Envy.
Oh, gosh.
We probably shouldn't even go down that one very far already. We've done enough in that direction.
Okay. I agree.
But why is Jakar doing this? It comes down to, and Marcus. Comes down to pure friendship,
mm-hmm.
which is it's a touching moment. It's a lot of humor, but it kind of just hits you right there.
Yeah.
The bartender is busy going through Centauri mugshots, and he identifies Jakar. Like I said, bad news. Marcus showing up afterwards. You know, I like the way he extracts information. he seems to have a rather aggressive approach.
Yeah.
And not just now, but every time he's tried to extract information, it takes him a bit.
Tell me what I want to know, or I'm going to nail your head to the wall.
Right. He runs into this problem where he seems to keep having to wait for people to regain consciousness.
Yeah, well, you got to get him to slow down before you can get him to answer questions, I suppose.
Yeah.
Wakey, wakey.
Well, Bab 5, Franklin, is clearing out Sheridan's effects, and he has, in quotes, a message for Delenn. It's an entry from Sheridan's private log. it's really an interesting conversation, you know, as far as a lot of description on how he's really focusing on turning things that are bad into a positive, and just kind of, oh yeah, and by the way, how much he loves Delenn.
Yeah. You know, did you notice, notice the little ironic thing with her touching the image of his face in the same way that he did with Anna way back when he saw her message?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's exactly the same, isn't it?
Yeah, so Anna was on Zahadum and he was pining away for her, and now
right.
Sheridan's on Zahadum and she's Zahadum. Pining away for him.
And it's the same kind of, yeah, it's exactly the same.
Both were presumed dead.
Right.
So, kind of an interesting irony there, too.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when he's talking about his relationship with Delenn, he describes it as falling off a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of irony.
Yeah. Well, but that case he was falling. The second case he jumped.
But he was falling after he jumped.
Well, yeah.
He also said, maybe I can fly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he was following cautious instructions. Jump. Jump now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Marcus fills in Jakar on what he's learned. It seems that IPX was behind the salvaging of Mike's ship.
Yeah.
Interplanetary
Expeditions. This company has their fingers in everybody's pie.
You know, Sheridan's wife was not working for good people.
Apparently not.
And it's amazing that she didn't realize it. You know, yeah. Problems with IPX go all the way back to episode Infection.
Yes.
In season one.
Yes. So.
But, yeah.
It does seem to be a sinister outfit. Now, with what Anna was doing, though, you know, even the worst companies for that kind of thing have their innocent side to it.
Yeah, but where she was going, based on other people that were doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like, I can't help but ask. It's like, okay, does she not have any idea whatsoever? Or is she truly just that low on the food chain?
Well, see, that would be my thought. She had skills that IPX needed. So they hired her for the job. And she herself had no sinister intent.
Right.
So that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, Jakar convinces Marcus to go back to Babylon 5 for some help. Shall we say that it was pretty obvious that was going to end badly? I mean, what was it? 30 seconds and he was captured by the Centauri.
Yes. But he put up a heck of a fight.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't go quietly into the dark night.
Nope, not at all. Of course, what did you expect for Jakar? that was his Princess Leia moment, because, you know, her blaster was definitely not set on stun. Or rather, his blaster was definitely not set on stun.
Yeah. So he took out a couple of Centauri, and they mm-hmm. can't possibly be happy about that.
Right.
Thought it was weird he kept his back to the door. He clearly suspected what was going on when he heard the footsteps. And
mm-hmm.
We see the shot looking under the door, people coming by. But the way the scene played out, he apparently left his back to the door until they came in, and then he rolls over and shoots. And I didn't know why he didn't get out of bed. If he intended to put up a fight, or at least orient himself toward the door so that he doesn't lose that time having to roll over.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think
I'll throw a wag out at it mm-hmm. and just say he was trying to get the element of surprise.
Maybe, yeah. Even though as soon as they came in, he rolled, so it was...
Yeah, but as you said, captured by the Centauri.
And it wouldn't have changed the outcome. he was going to get captured.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because weren't they also coming in from multiple directions?
I don't know if they were coming in from multiple directions, but there were. It seemed there were a lot.
It was overwhelming numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that guy, he got off a lucky shot. I don't know if it was a lucky shot, but he did get off a shot that put him out, put Jakar out.
Yeah. Wow. If we were watching on TV, that would have been fade to commercial. And we come back to a lot of white stars.
Oh, yeah.
Delenn is bringing the Rangers out into the open. So we are getting, how do I put it? Let's put it this way.
Oh my gosh.
She's bringing the Rangers into the open. In 7 days, she is going to attack Zahadoom.
Yeah.
And she's got a new life, a new purpose. So that message from Sheridan got her out of her funk.
Yeah, basically, as she puts it, there's nothing left to lose. So, my question for you, in this Ranger attack plan, is this really a case of nothing left to lose? Or is this really more of just another aspect, another element of the self-pity? You know, nothing left to live for.
She doesn't come across pitiful at this point.
Yeah. But is she taking the opposite track as Sheridan seems to be taking? Sheridan's being pushed to find something to live for. Is she looking for something to die for? Which, by the way, is a very Mimbari approach to things. Now, I really don't know. I'm throwing the question out.
That's a neat contrast to the advice that Sheridan's going to get real soon here.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure I understand the urgency of Delenn wanting to attack Zahadoom.
Right.
Unless it has something to do with what Franklin said during his opening monologue, is that the shadows have been gone for quite some time, but they are going to attack again.
Right.
So.
And it's going to be worse.
Yeah. And that is sort of a carryover theme from the last episode. You know, sort of the idea of hit them now while they're still hurting.
Yeah. Well, do they know? Well, of course they do, because Jakar told them about the nukes.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Ivanova was filled in by Veer, of all people.
Right. So Delenn is going in for a mop-up operation.
Or go down in a blaze of glory.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what went through my mind watching her deliver this decision, direction, was going back to when, you know, the council, well, Franklin says it in the opening monologue, too, you know, the council or the league has fallen apart.
Yeah.
Remember, we saw, the war's over. The whole attitude that was present last time. And so I kind of thought Delenn was playing on that sentiment, even though she still has the people that are willing to fight. But says, okay, if it's over, you know, let's do our last best thing that we can do to take the enemy down.
With whatever left of the league she can muster together before even those are gone.
I took it for what it looked like on the surface. She had found a new purpose. She's out of her funk. She may not totally accept that Sheridan's gone, but she's kind of gotten up, shook the dust off, and she's ready to do something. And about all that's left that they can do is punch back as best they can. And so that's what she throws out to them, but does it with a purpose. Here's what we're going to do in 7 days.
Now because you know later you're going to be in an even weaker position.
Right. But that's interesting what you said, Raul, about is this fueled in part by an attitude that might be inside of her now, which is, I've lost John. I have nothing really left to live for.
Yeah, and this what she's doing here is a rationalization mm-hmm. of that.
It's not like depressed suicidal. It's just, I'm done. I'm going to do now all that I can do to finish this off.
We have Delenn acting very, very much human.
Well, no, this actually is very much warrior cast. I mean, think about like when the Trigati came and had their little standoff with Bab 5.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of my way, right? Get behind me.
Yeah. Or that too. So, you know, if that is what's going on in her head, it doesn't necessarily change the reality or the factuality of what she's trying to do. But we had mentioned fear. Mm-hmm. That gives us a real good segue, because Londo gets woken up in the middle of the night by the minister, who, it turns out, was sent to fetch Mallari by the Emperor.
Mm.
How do I put it? The Emperor was a little put out, shall we say?
Well, he was acting that way.
Yeah.
You never know with this guy. We will find that out, I believe, in the next episode.
But, yeah, Londo's got the BS part pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, but I couldn't insult your majesty.
Yeah. By not being properly attired or whatever. He's, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, he spreads it on pretty thick.
Or the whole bit about but killing me would be killing a part of yourself, and I would absolutely have to object to you doing anything to harm yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the scariest part about all of this is the way the Emperor really seems to identify with Londo.
Mm-hmm.
Why? It's like, why is that?
Hmm.
Oh, Londo says the right things to stroke his ego. So,
yeah.
Well,
it must be.
Yeah. And we know there's a lot of other people in the palace who have been dispatched that couldn't be trusted. So,
right.
You know, Londo may just be the next in a long line of future cadavers.
Right. Members of the Secret Council.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, you know, we talked before about Londo having been told that he'll be emperor someday. So that gives him confidence, even though he's got the blustery part of that in check right now. But it gives him confidence that it's not just going to end here.
And sometimes that confidence is all you need to simply do.
Mm-hmm.
But the Emperor's got a gift.
Yeah.
For Londo.
Yeah.
Jakar.
I know. That was really sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
And Londo does not seem happy about this. Surprise, surprise. But he does seem very calculating.
Well, Londo's buried the hatchet with Jakar. It's over. It's done. Londo has somewhat made amends. And so, you know, Londo wouldn't be happy about this.
Yeah, and actually we're going to find the ultimate amends about to be made. Jakar's one concern. Now, I wonder if this is sort of him trying to get a message to Londo or not, or is it just a very dry, almost anti-humor? But do you know where Mr. Garibaldi might be?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a lighter moment and a pretty ugly scene.
Yeah.
It is. But, you know, Jakar has set out to do this, and he's now no longer going to be able to carry out his mm-hmm. self-imposed mission.
Yeah. It's almost like he's passing. It's almost like he's trying to pass the torch.
Mm.
I wonder if this just occurred to me, still kind of thinking about Londo and the Emperor, that relationship, which is pretty mm-hmm. weird. This had come up an episode ago, maybe two, whether or not, remember, Londo's there because he was requested to be there by the Emperor's associates. Was that the word that was used?
Right.
And then we kind of speculated as to whether or not the Emperor is acting on his own, or if he might have a friend.
Actually, I think the Emperor is acting on his own.
Because he's just that crazy.
He is that narcissistic.
Yeah, he doesn't...
He
I don't think he has a Drak keeper.
Yeah.
He wouldn't need one.
No. because he's already out of his gourd.
And as reckless as he seems that he could be, he must have some respect for his associates enough that he's going to bring Londo in. So now Londo...
Or it's his own greed driving him, but same effect.
Right. Yeah. And so that might be some measure of protection, too, even though Londo wouldn't know all of that just yet. He just knows that the associates were involved in him being brought to Centauri.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about where it ends. So he would have to be, if this is even a part of his calculus about how he acts around the Emperor, it's there might be some element of certainly he's not just going to off me unless the associates have decided they can dispose of him. And if they needed that done or wanted that done, they didn't need to bring him to Centauri to do it.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, it's curiosity.
You know, that might also have something to do with Londo's confidence as well, in addition to his foreknowledge.
Right.
But we get an answer in the next scene, which is just as dark and ugly as it's already gotten, because it seems he's in a dark cell and being put to some sort of psychological torture.
Right.
So it would seem.
Garibaldi.
Uh-huh. By Psycor.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sum it up just a little bit. So the shadows captured him, IPX found him, and Psycor has
him. Quote, unquote.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know.
Found him or were given him.
Well, true.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we have these three entities in bed with each other, and that is never going to turn out well.
No. No.
If they're not working together, they're at least cooperative.
That's... Yeah.
I would, when you think about some of the stuff we've heard about IPX and what they're looking for and what they're trying to do, and what we're going to see that they have done at the end of the season, I think it's more, I think it's very actively involved.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But we switch back to Londo. Actually, we switch back to Jakar, and Londo's visiting him in his dungeon cell. And, you know, aside from the fact that, you know, he's obviously gained some level of respect for Jakar, you notice how he keeps referring to the Centauri at this point as them and they.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not doing it consciously. It's he seems to be thinking of the people who are doing this stuff as not him anymore.
Right. He's distanced himself from the Emperor.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know if that was a royal we talking about the Emperor specifically or him and all of his willing followers. And Londo clearly doesn't, he's not a part of that crowd.
Yeah. So let's just say I think there's been some true repentance here, at least in that regard. And it's pretty, he's trying to make a deal with Jakar, and part of that is explaining, well, Jim, this is a long clip, but it's really, in some ways, this is another turning point as far as the series is concerned.
It is.
So go ahead and play that.
They will make you a toy. You will be tortured. You will be tortured for a very long time. I have seen them prolong suffering for days, weeks, months. And when they have finished, they will strap you to a table, not much longer than this bench. And they will make an incision here, just beneath the neck. And open you all the way down. Assuming you are still conscious, still entertaining, they will begin removing your internal organs in pieces no longer than this. Somewhere along the line, as they make a mountain of your parts and pieces, you will die.
Does this please you?
No. No, it doesn't. Once, long ago. No, not even then. You have never been a friend to me, but what he would do to you, I would not wish for anyone. There is a monster on the throne, Jakar. A well-protected monster. He must be removed. And you may be the means I have been waiting for. I believe I can save your life, but it would not be easy. And you will suffer greatly before this is over. I cannot help that. I wish I could. I have no desire to see you suffer. But I must watch. And you must endure until the time is right. And then I will act. And you will help me. Yes?
You didn't ask the price for my cooperation.
You are not exactly in a position to bargain, Jakar.
Neither are you. You want my help for the sake of your people. I will give it for the sake of my own. If I remove the monster from your throne, you will remove the monster from my world. Leave Narn. Set my world free. Promise me this, and I will do as you ask.
You have my word.
So it would seem that Jakar has a new mission.
Yeah. And his comment is just, I'll help you remove the monster from your throat if you'll help me remove the monster from my world.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. And that's going to be the focal point of their relationship. And I'd go as far as saying the growing friendship between the two of them for the rest of the series.
I really don't know if I would call it a friendship. It's kind of a...
Not at this point,
a
no.
A very strange relationship.
I think not at this point, but seeing it towards the end, especially, you know, at the end of this... Well, both at the end of this season with some of the interactions between Delenn and Jakar and how he continues his relationship with Londo, or actually how they continue the relationship with each other after they no longer need to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it'll...
And then what you see in the Centauri trilogy.
It'll be interesting to see how this develops and try to analyze it.
And whatever it is, if this is the starting point that we're going to measure from, it begins with Londo saying, what was it, you've never been my friend, or something to that effect.
You've never been a friend to me.
And then from here forward, that non-friendship changes into something that's not unfriendly anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Absolutely brilliant observation,
that,
sir.
That pause after Jakar puts his conditions out in front of Londo, before Londo says, you have my word. Mm-hmm. I remember that scene from the first time I saw the show, and that pause seemed to take forever. it's you know, a second or two. It's not that long. But when Jakar throws that out, and Londo looks like he's really weighing that out. I just remember thinking, answer the question. You know, you say yes or say no, but, you know, I don't want to wait and hear. I don't want to wait to hear, you know, on the rewatches and then even in the audio clip, that pause is minimal. But that was, for me, that was high drama right there. I couldn't wait to hear what Londo was going to say.
Right. Even though you couldn't possibly imagine how he would say no.
Right.
It's like, what was going through his head then?
You know, we saw in And the Rock Cried Out, No Hiding Place, we saw we saw Londo make the first move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sort of a peace offering.
Yeah, but and that's all it was. But for Jakar, that wasn't enough. It may have been at the moment, but now he wants a whole banana.
Yeah,
can't hurt to ask.
Yep.
He's done. You know, it appears that he's done. Why not ask? And so he does.
Yeah, I
set my world free.
I fully think Jakar expects to die.
Mm-hmm. I think
And probably Londo expects Jakar to die.
I think Londo, except for the fact, I think he knows, well, he's seen Jakar in his vision too. He has seen Jakar in the vision of his death as well.
You know, though, we seem to conveniently put that aside when it is not convenient to remember that. You know, I mean, Londo just sat there and for 4 minutes described to Jakar how his torture and eventual demise was going to come about.
So do the events shape the prophecy, or do the prophecies shape the events?
Well, see, and I was just thinking about that. And every time we find this trope in science fiction, it's always followed with, the future is not written in stone. This is one possible outcome. So the new circumstances, as they arise, perhaps change what will be.
Or does it? Because if you look at the current theories of how time works, the beginning point of time and the end point of time came into existence simultaneously, and we're just progressing along that axis.
But you know what the best part of this is? We'll find out in a season and a half.
Yeah.
Yes.
We don't have to wait till the end point.
Mm-hmm. You know, and as long as, looking at the clock, as long as we are getting so philosophical, let's go back to Zaha Doom for a few moments.
Is that philosophical or full of crap?
With
yes.
our grand philosopher there with Sheridan.
Yes.
Because Sheridan has come full circle in more ways than one. We really find out now, you know, just in discussing Sheridan talking about his concerns, Lorian makes this comment about it being a terrible thing when your children fight. And Sheridan's at first assuming that Lorian is one of the first ones, and no, he's not. He is the first one.
Yeah.
And he's waiting for someone. And apparently he's been waiting a very, very long time, because we find out that Zaha Doom is not the Shadows' homeworld. The Shadows keep coming back because he's there. So they, if not worship, at least they revere him, though he doesn't seem to think much of their reverence.
Well, yeah. And he doesn't do anything to stop them.
No, he's waiting.
Yeah.
And I love his comment. He just, out of the blue, looks at Sheridan. By the way, did you know you have a Vorlon inside you?
Right. It's like, I've grown tired of this. Hey, did you know?
Yeah. Oh, by the way. In our very next exciting
episode. I think I've met him. I think I met him once.
Yeah.
But apparently, all of this circular journey has been Lorian trying to help Sheridan, because he points out that Kosh is part of the problem, and they have to be able to surrender to death before Lorian can help them.
Yeah. And it's only taken a half hour to get there. Whereas Lorian could have said, well, look.
9 days in the showtime.
Lorian could have said, look, my name is Lorian, and I'm a first one, and if, in order for you to live, you got to die.
Darn it.
I think, though, that's a matter of they have to. It's not something he can tell them to do. It's something that they have to arrive at.
Okay, you're still being philosophical. I was just trying to be. I was being comical philosophical. So.
Yeah. Well, in that context, then the comments about how they being Kosh and Sheridan, he has to surrender to death so he can be.
Mm-hmm.
Lorian says that sort of thing a whole lot better than Jason Ironheart did.
Yeah.
It's not, I'm becoming.
Yeah, very true.
And then this turns into what we talked about earlier, which isn't about death at all. It's about life, right?
Does he have something to live for? Mm-hmm. And Lorian notes that, and there's the big thing about this show is consequences, and Lorian cannot create life, but he can breathe onto the embers.
Mm-hmm. And take stock of what Sheridan does have to live for. He has lots to live for.
The big thing, and it's, wow. He starts to, he makes the reference to Lorian about, will he be able to catch him or will it work? And it's, hope is all we have.
Mm-hmm.
That whole catch him sort of comment goes straight back to Delenn will catch him if he falls.
Which is exactly what he has to live for.
So isn't it cool that this frustrating conversation he has with this guy, this first one, started or early in the conversation with Sheridan saying, my job is to escape. And he says, really? You don't want to escape from all prisons. What about love or whatever he said? Mm-hmm. And now it's ending, having come full circle, with somehow the clinging to the love, not escaping.
Surrendering.
From that prison actually gets him out of where he is.
Rather than escaping, he's surrendering.
Right.
Yep.
There has to be a way to get out of here. There's no way to get out of here. No, there has to be. Well, I need to escape. No, you can't escape. And by the way, you don't want to escape from all these prisons. What about relationships or love? I forget what the phrase was used.
Mm-hmm.
And now, whoop, we're right back at the beginning.
Yeah, very theological, actually, the way Straczynski writes that, which isn't unusual for him. It's like the only way to be free is to submit.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So now he's got hope, right? That was the line, hope is all we have.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And we get the whole replay of his fall.
Did you guys notice when this, right as this scene ended, it looked like Sheridan was in the process of leaping up, or he moved off camera really quickly. But then when the scene actually closes, he's still sitting or standing there. I can't remember. I just thought, I don't know what that was, just an editing snafu or what. But they're close in on him and he turns like he's going, I've got it. I've got to go. And then as in the next scene, right at the end, when it's pulled back, he's still sitting right where he was. I thought that was weird.
I will have to look at that.
Yeah. It distracted me.
At any rate, the episode ends rather abruptly.
Mm-hmm. And very interestingly, because we've got Sheridan on the ground with Lorian above.
Yeah. And that's where it just drops.
Uh-huh.
And which is really kind of strange because, well, I shouldn't say strange, but you're expecting more right away.
Right.
Yep.
And it just cuts off. Sorry, no more. Goodbye.
it follows the leave them wanting more concept very nicely.
Oh, yeah.
It worked.
It's a very abrupt ending. You're right.
But the show ended. I was satisfied. That was a full meal.
Yeah. Yeah. Next episode. Well, before we do that, any final thoughts, folks? Because we have been talking for a very long time here.
Yeah, not really. All joking aside, Lorian is very dramatic, and I understand, just for the record, I do understand that he is trying to lead Sheridan to come to his own conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
It would have to, after all, be Sheridan's idea to succumb and not someone telling him to.
Yeah.
Well, combination of both probably free will and for Lorient to do what he needs to do to restore or save or whatever Sheridan. Mm-hmm. He can't have Sheridan fighting him in any way.
Right. Well, Sheridan kept saying, I don't know how to do that.
Uh-huh.
So Lorient worked him into a position where he figured it out. Oh.
Yeah, he could.
Wait. I know what you're asking me to do now. I understand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Final thoughts, gentlemen.
Well, that was mine.
Yeah. So next week.
Next time, we have episode 403, The Summoning.
Yep.
And this is a rather grim episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But some of these threads come back together, so.
It starts to bring, it definitely brings things back together, but it is one of the more disturbing episodes of the series in several directions.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, everybody, you have heard our thoughts, especially on an episode like this. We would all really love to hear some of your thoughts, too. So, please, whether it's off the Facebook page or the website or email or now, since we seem to have a good number of listeners on Reddit as well, let us know what you think. So, gentlemen,
yep.
I guess at this point it's time to ask, was there any boom today?
I don't think there was any boom today. What do you think, JP?
No boom today.
A boom tomorrow?
Well, of course.
There's always boom tomorrow.
Always. Good night, everybody.
Good night now. Say good night, JP.
Good night, JP.
Podcast terminated. Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at thebabylonprojectpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project Podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.